Welcome to episode 151 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for April 30th, 2010. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. On this week's episode of the Fredcast, LA bike thefts are getting more violent. That New York City cop gets his verdict. Lance Armstrong tweets that he's expecting El Cinco. A follow-up once again to the Rahsaan Bahadi Dana Point Grand Prix controversy, pro cycling news, Grand Canyon gets its bike rental program, and George Costanza hits a cyclist. Following the news, our interview with Mark from AmsterdamEyes.com and some upcoming events, plus PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder because here comes the Fredcast. Fellow Freds, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. Great to have you back with us. And I've gone and I'm back. Went to Amsterdam, had a great time. We'll be talking about that later on in the show. Yes, I was there on business, but thankfully I had a few extra hours to sit down and talk with Mark from AmsterdamEyes.com. We had a great day and a great bike ride. And yes, I rode my bike all over Amsterdam, and It was a really great experience. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. But first, it's time for the news here on the Fredcast. And the news, once again, is sponsored by Keen Footwear. I told you on the last episode of the Fredcast that Keen is all about living the hybrid life and about how your Keen shoes allow you to experience the great outdoors in as many ways possible. And I told you, about the ubiquitous Newport sandal, that trademark shoe that Keen is best known for. But I went to Amsterdam last week and I traveled and I cycled wearing my Keen Austin pedals. They're a leather Oxford lace-up shoe that has great casual shoe styling, but is also SPD compatible. I wore them on the plane, I wore them walking around town, and yes, I wore them riding my folding bike all over Amsterdam. Very, very comfortable. They looked great, and they got me through a trip that included a lot of walking and a lot of cycling. They're a shoe that I think that you'll enjoy for your daily bike commutes or simply just for going out and wearing a pair of jeans. You can check them out by going to www.thefredcast.com and clicking the Keen banner right there on the site. We thank Keen Footwear so much for their support of the Fredcast and our news segment this week, and we thank you for your support of Keen. Now let's get to the news. I recently talked here on the show about how LA police have reported a 29% increase in bike thefts last year, 2009, as compared to 2008, with nearly 2,000 bikes reported stolen in the city of Los Angeles in 2009. Well, now those increases in bicycle thefts in the city of Los Angeles are beginning to turn violent, and they have police and city officials becoming more and more concerned. And this after a shooting that was announced several weeks after it happened. It turned out that April 4th in the Koreatown section of Los Angeles, two men were shot during a bicycle theft. Two guys tried to steal these bicycles. The two gentlemen who owned the bikes got into a struggle, and they were shot as a result. According to LAPD Detective Dennis Bopp, who's investigating this case, quote, "They nearly killed him. It was a crime of opportunity that turned to violence," unquote. According to the Los Angeles Times, this took place at about 3 a.m. in front of a catering truck, again, in LA's Koreatown section. Two men walking up and trying to steal the bikes. A struggle ensued, during which one of the cyclists was shot. And then, as the two robbers rode away, one of them turned and shot the other cyclist, something that was completely unnecessary. They already had the bikes. One of the men was shot in the shoulder and released a day or so after the incident. The other, however, suffered serious injuries to his vital organs and wasn't released until just a couple of days ago. Thankfully, police said that they do have a video from the catering truck, and they're hoping that that will aid them in helping to find these two individuals. The LA Times quoted a cycling advocate by the name of Steve Box, who said, quote, "We've had cyclists hit with baseball bats, but the fact that there's a gun here ramps it up. The bike is the new iPod in terms of theft because you can sell it quickly," unquote. He also pointed out something which hopefully goes without saying. We all love our bikes. A lot of us have expensive bikes, and for a lot of people, it's our only form of transportation. Somebody stealing our bike is a very personal thing. It can cost us a lot of money, and it can certainly keep us from being able to get back and forth to our jobs. However, I want you around and listening to the Fredcast for a long time. If somebody's trying to steal your bike and they're using overwhelming force, let them take the bike. Nothing is more valuable than your life. We talked last week about the trial of Patrick Pogan, the former New York City police officer who was on trial for assault, harassment, and lying in the July 2008 critical mass incident that took place in Times Square that was filmed on video that appeared to show Patrick Pogan body checking a cyclist off of his bicycle during that critical mass event. Well, the verdict is in on Thursday. After 2 days of deliberation, the jury returned a mixed verdict. They acquitted Pogan on the more serious charges of assault and harassment, but convicted him on the charge of lying in his police report about the incident. This all, of course, all stemming from that July 2008 critical mass near Times Square, where initially Patrick Pogan, the rookie officer who had only been on the job about a fortnight, reported that Long, the cyclist, steered into him and almost knocked him down. However, a tourist video that was posted on YouTube clearly showed what appeared to be Patrick Pogan body checking the cyclist off of his bicycle. Despite the video, Patrick Pogan testified that he was just trying to protect himself during the encounter and that he never attempted to lie or misrepresent what happened in his report. In their closing arguments, the lawyers for the defense said that critical mass is against the NYPD, and unfortunately, Officer Pogan became its scapegoat. District Attorney Ryan Connors told the jurors, however, that this is not a case of the New York Police Department against critical mass. This is about what Mr. Pogan himself did. After the verdict was handed down, a local TV station in New York caught up with Mr. Long, the victim in this case, and asked him what he thought about the video and the fact that Pogan was convicted of lying, but not of the more serious assault charges. Long was quoted as saying, quote, "I don't think Pogan ever intended to assault me," unquote, going on to say, quote, "I do hope," in a very Rodney King style, "that we can all just chill out." However, as for Patrick Pogan's father, also a longtime New York City police officer, quote, "For them to make a decision like that, to have someone's life in your hands, it's tough, but that's what police officers do in seconds, and they had 8 hours to think about it. My son had seconds to think about what he had to do to make that arrest." Then, according to President Pat Lynch of the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association, quote, "The message here is every New York City police officer, especially our rookie police officers, should think twice when they think they're doing the right thing on the street. This will have a chilling effect." Well, I can't say I agree with what the Police Benevolent Association's president had to say. I think the chilling effect here is that the jury decided not to charge Mr. Pogan, to convict him of assault and harassment. At least to my way of thinking, at least looking at that video, I think the jury didn't go far enough. Last April 20th, Ashley Jackson, a competitive cyclist from Northern California and a member of the Alto Velo cycling team, was riding with her coach and her boyfriend early in the evening when a silver BMW drove up from behind and struck her. According to her boyfriend, David Nelson, the car's mirror clipped Ashley and knocked her to the ground, and she suffered severe head trauma and brain damage. Now, nearly a year after that tragic accident occurred, the Santa Clara County Sheriff's Office has announced that they've arrested Robert Paul Shiro in connection with last year's hit-and-run collision that injured Ashley Jackson. Shiro, who's 70 years old, has been charged with felony hit and run with a possible charge of driving with a suspended license. As of Thursday afternoon, Shiro was still being held at the main jail in Santa Clara County on $100,000 bail. Shiro runs a property management business and does indeed own a silver 7 Series BMW. According to one of the stories that I read, Ashley Jackson still suffers from double vision and a damaged optic nerve in her left eye. The left side of her body is still much weaker than the right side. However, hopefully over time, some of these things will improve. It's nice to hear, finally, a little bit of justice in a case like this. Over the past two decades, there's been a literal revolution in bicycle saddle design, with bicycle saddles becoming more and more anatomically correct so that the perineal areas of both men and women were protected during even long rides. Well, one of the pioneers in bicycle saddle design, Tom Milton, passed away last week while riding the Devil Mountain Double Century in Northern California. Several riders attempted to give him CPR, as did paramedics, but unfortunately, Mr. Milton did not respond, and he died of a heart attack. Milton is best known for the patent that he held, U.S. patent number 7,341,308, which was filed in 2005 and granted in 2008, for a saddle design called the Selle Anatomica. This was a design for an improved molded leather bicycle saddle that had a carefully designed slot between the nose of the saddle and the rear of the seat portion. Milton is not only known for his Selle Anatomica saddle design, but he's also known for his endurance cycling. As an example, in 2008, Milton completed 11 double century events in California. He rode from Sacramento to Los Angeles several times, and he did 600 miles in 4 days. Tom Milton will be missed, and we wish him tailwinds and smooth roads. Now, I'm not quite certain how many of you follow Lance Armstrong's Twitter feed, but if you were following earlier last week, he tweeted the following: "Getting questions today about someone I'm following, a certain Cinco Armstrong. What to say? Yet another blessing in our lives. I cannot wait." In other words, Lance Armstrong announcing the pregnancy of his girlfriend, Anna Hansen, and the impending birth of his fifth child. According to the Cinco Armstrong Twitter feed, Lance's fifth child will either be named Jack or Olivia, and is also tweeting from the womb, recently tweeting, "I got two arms, two legs, a nickname, and I'm 2 inches long. See y'all in October." Cinco has tweeted 3 times and, amazingly, even in this age of social networking, already has over 2,100 followers. Incredible. Well, it seems like all we've been talking about recently is Rahsaan Bahati and the events that occurred at the Dana Point Grand Prix several weeks ago when Bahati crashed and he accused Jake Keogh of United Healthcare Pro Cycling of intentionally doing so. Then the video coming out, which seemed to indicate that that's exactly what happened. Well, now USA Cycling has thoroughly, quote unquote, investigated the incident at the Dana Point Grand Prix on April 11th and has now fined Rahsaan Bahati for violating Rule 1Q2A for unsportsmanlike conduct. Rule 1Q2A reads as follows: "General misconduct. The following offenses may be punished by suspension or lesser penalties: acts of theft, fraud, or grossly unsportsmanlike conduct in conjunction with a sporting event." According to USA Cycling CEO Steve Johnson, quote, "We take all claims of misconduct seriously. All cyclists racing on our premier domestic calendar should be cognizant of their behavior and strive to set the example for our youth." I don't have a problem with USA Cycling's decision and the fine against Bahati, because there's no doubt that what he did after the crash was, well, quite frankly, unsportsmanlike, and I believe in his Twitter feed he called it childish. However, my question is, what about Jake Keogh? I understand that United Healthcare Pro Cycling obviously was not pleased with Bahati joining their train. However, is it or is it not unsportsmanlike for Jake Keogh to do what he did, essentially body checking by bike Bahati to the ground? I'm waiting to see whether or not USA Cycling comes back with a suspension or a fine or some sort of sanction for Keo. If not, I think that USA Cycling has not behaved equitably in their evaluation of this case. Well, let's look at some events in the world of professional cycling, including last weekend's venerable classic Liège-Bastogne-Liège and the controversy that resulted from that race. Liège-Bastogne-Liège is a 160-mile race, and it was won last weekend by Alexander Vinokourov from Team Astana in 6 hours, 37 minutes, and 48 seconds. Second place going to Alexander Kolobnev from Team Katusha. Third place going to Alejandro Valverde from Castapania, 1 minute and 4 seconds back. Also 1 minute 4 seconds back were Philippe Gilbert and Cadel Evans, rounding out the top five. Andy Schleck from Team Saxo Bank came in 3 seconds behind Evans in 6th place. Igor Anton from Euskaltel Euskadi at 107 also. Also at 107 were Chris Horner, Frank Schlecht, and Tour de France champion Alberto Contador. Now, this was a very controversial victory. And as a matter of fact, when Vinokourov came across the line, there were plenty of whistles and boos as a result of his victory. Because as you know, Alexander Vinokourov is now coming off of a 2-year suspension from professional cycling for blood doping as a result of the controversy at the 2007 Tour de France. Almost as soon as Vino crossed the finish line, the recriminations and the doubts were spoken, including all over Twitter. And it was quite the firestorm that was going on there for a while, with all sorts of people showing their disgust with the fact that Vino was able to come back and win such a race, and with a lot of people expressing doubts as to whether or not he did so clean. Meanwhile, there were plenty of people who were defending Vinokourov and his right to return to professional cycling after having served his 2-year punishment. After the race, and after all of the questions from the press and all of the doubts and recriminations, Vinokourov wrote an open letter, which is available on the Team Astana website, which reads as follows. While reading the press comments regarding my last victory in Liège-Bastogne-Liège, I was deeply saddened. I don't understand this persecution against me. I can't do anything against the doubts hanging over me since the 2007 case, but I reject all the accusations brought against me today without any evidence. Since my return in August, I have always been honest with the press. I responded to all requests for interviews. I have hidden nothing. Ironically, my victory in Liège seems to revive old jealousies for which I am not responsible. The media comments contrast with the hundreds of congratulatory messages from fans that I keep getting on my website and my Facebook page. I don't understand this discrepancy. As if I had to be forbidden of success on my bike to leave everyone with a clear conscience. In which sport are we allowed to be at the start of a competition without the right to win? I love cycling. It gave me everything, and I want to give it good things in return. I paid 2 years on suspension for the dark years of my career. If I repeated that I didn't want to talk about it, it's only for the sake of my sport. I don't think cycling needs to reconsider all these dirty stories to move forward. This is my personal vision of the problem. Everybody is not obliged to share it. Obviously, my attitude that I consider the most correct and most respectful way possible is one more time misrepresented. I'm sorry. Again, I have nothing to hide. Since my comeback, I have been the subject of more than 30 doping tests, all negatives, including 21 in the context of the ADAMS system. That's where they figure out where he is, and then they come find him. This allows me to validate my biological passport and therefore to race. In Tenerife, where I had my recent training before the Tour of Trentino that arose the indignation of some journalists, I was subject to 2 unannounced blood and urine tests in 2 weeks. I can't do more than what the sport regulations ask me to prove my honesty. Today, I only wish to be respected as I respect everyone, my colleagues in the peloton as well as the journalists. I don't want to be the only and too easy target for all the ills of cycling. So says Alexander Vinokourov. Meanwhile, we are also in the midst of the Tour de Romandie in Switzerland, that going from April 27th through May the 2nd, in other words, Sunday of this weekend. Currently, after 3 stages, leading the general classification is Michael Rogers. In 2nd place is Alejandro Valverde. He's 2 seconds back of Rogers. Vladimir Karpets is in 3rd place. He's 6 seconds back. In 4th, our team Ovechkin from Team Katusha is 7 seconds back. And in 5th place is Denis Menchov, 9 seconds back from Team Rabobank. Now, Mark Cavendish won stage two of the Tour de Romandie, a 172-kilometer event in 4 hours, 28 minutes, and 59 seconds. However, after that victory, he was withdrawn from the event by his team because of a gesture that he made as he came across the finish line. Cavendish has been the subject of a lot of scrutiny by the press and fans and critics who have said that he is not in winning shape this year. And so when he came across the line and won stage two of the Tour de Romandie, he made a gesture which some considered to be, well, offensive. As a result, his HTC Columbia team withdrew him from the event, saying, quote, "Mark Cavendish was taken out of the Tour de Romandie at the conclusion of today's stage as a result of his inappropriate actions after winning stage two of the race on Thursday." In addition to having been withdrawn, he also was handed a 6,000 Swiss franc or $5,500 US fine from the jury of commissaires at the Tour de Romandie. According to the race jury, quote, "In spite of the rider's apologies made in a team statement and then to the jury before the start of Friday's time trial, the jury inflicts a 6,000 Swiss franc fine on Cavendish for incorrect behavior." Mark Cavendish did issue an official apology saying, quote, "I want to publicly apologize for the gesture I made on the finish line of the Tour de Romandie yesterday. I did want to make a statement to my critics, but I realize that making a rude gesture on the finish line is not the best way to do that. I apologize to everyone watching the race and especially the kids. I'm not proud of releasing the feelings in that way. I hope I can redeem myself and show my feelings and passion for cycling with some exciting results in the next couple of months rather than with gestures such as the one I made yesterday." We'll have the final results of this year's Tour de Romandie in the next episode of the Fredcast, so stay tuned. Here in the United States, the SRAM Tour of the Gila is ongoing. We finished three stages of that event, and leading the GC is Levi Leipheimer, not from Team Radio Shack, but from Team Mellow Johnny's. Due to some UCI technicalities, Team Radio Shack racers are in New Mexico racing the Tour of the Gila under the Mellow Johnny's name, much as they did last year, instead of under their official UCI Pro Tour team name. Second place in the GC at the moment is Tom Danielson. He's riding, instead of for Garmin Transitions, for D's Nuts. Third place is Dave Zabriskie, also riding for, guess what, D's Nuts. Sitting in fourth place at the moment is Phil Zajacek from Fly V Australia. In fifth place is Luis Amaran from Jamis Sutterhome, powered by Colavita. There are two more stages left in the 24th annual SRAM Tour of the Gila, and we'll bring you those results on the next episode of the Fredcast. And then all eyes in the world of professional cycling will turn toward Holland and the start of the Giro d'Italia on May the 8th, running from May the 8th through the 30th. And of course, the following weekend, the start of the Amgen Tour of California, running May 16th through the 23rd. Full coverage of both events right here on the Fredcast. As is typical this early in the season, there have been some changes in the overall standings from the UCI. Currently sitting in first place is Philippe Gilbert. In second, Alejandro Valverde. In third, Joaquin Rodriguez. In fourth, Cadel Evans. And in fifth, Luis Leon Sanchez. Tom Bonin moves down to sixth place. Fabian Cancellara down to seventh. Alberto Contador moves up to eighth from 15th. Chris Horner up to ninth from 12th. And Tor Husovd moves into 10th place, down from 7th. And a quick follow-up to a story I brought to you last week when I told you that BMC had suspended Swiss rider Thomas Frey after having failed a doping test. Frey has now been fired by Team BMC after he acknowledged that he had used EPO before testing positive back in March. According to statement issued by Team BMC, quote, "Thomas Frey acted on his own and confirmed that his failure was without any relation to the BMC racing team. This complies with the team's own investigation on the case. Thomas Frey is regretting the negative publicity for the team due to his violation. Thomas Frey's violation is stated personally and separately by him to the public. The BMC racing team will now separate from Thomas Frey, but thanks Thomas Frey for his honesty to confess his failure. This brings transparency to the situation and is part of the anti-doping fight the BMC racing team is committed to be a part of. And finally, a brief note on Alejandro Valverde and his continuing fight with the Italian Olympic Committee, or CONI, C-O-N-I. The Italian Olympic Committee is now putting pressure on the UCI to extend Italy's ban on Alejandro Valverde to become a worldwide ban. You recall that CONI has banned Alejandro Valverde from racing in Italy as a result of investigations in Spain in 2006. Valverde has appealed to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, saying that the Italians did not have legal right or jurisdiction to judge him based on evidence that was seized by Spanish police. However, the Italian media reported on Monday that the Swiss federal court has rejected an appeal by Valverde seeking to overturn a ruling by the Court of Arbitration for Sport upholding his ban in Italy, but the Swiss court has not yet publicized its own ruling. A twisted case in the situation of Alejandro Valverde. As soon as it untwists itself, I'll bring you the information here on the Fredcast. For those of you planning to visit the Grand Canyon here in the United States and you're going to the South Rim, good news, you don't have to bring a bike because the National Park Service has just announced a new bicycle rental program at the South Rim of the Grand Canyon brought to you by Bright Angel Bicycle Rentals. I went to Bright Angel Bicycle Rentals website and I found that they're renting Haro hybrid comfort cruisers with multiple speeds and a comfort design. They also will rent Burley trailers, and for those who may have some physical limitations, they can also rent adult tricycles. I have brought my bike to both the South Rim and the North Rim of the Grand Canyon. The roads are really, really good, and there are some just phenomenal places to ride a bike, and I think that this is a great way for people to see our national parks here in the United States, and one of our most spectacular is the Grand Canyon. I've got links in the show notes to Bright Angel Bikes. Hopefully, if you get a chance to go there, you'll have a chance to experience one of these great bike rentals. Early Tuesday morning in Los Angeles' Hancock Park section, Jason Alexander, the actor who played George Costanza on TV's Seinfeld, was driving his car on Wilshire Boulevard near June Street when he collided with a 14-year-old boy on his bike who was riding to middle school. Unlike George Costanza, however, who I have a feeling would not have stuck around, Alexander did stick around and wait for authorities and an ambulance to arrive at the scene, reportedly accepting full responsibility for the accident. A police spokesman confirmed that the teenager, who was on his way to school, suffered minor injuries, bumps, and bruises, was taken to a nearby hospital to be examined as a precaution, but at this point, it does not look like any charges will be filed in the case. Good for you, Mr. Alexander, for taking responsibility for your actions and for your concern for the young man involved and for not doing what George would have done. And with that example of a driver doing the right thing, this is going to end the news for this episode of the Fredcast. The news brought to you once again by Keen Footwear. Live the hybrid life, wear Keens. Go to www.thefredcast.com and click on the Keen link to learn more about the Austin pedal and all of Keen's great pedal products. We thank Keen for their support of the news on this episode of the Fredcast, and we thank you for your support of Keen. And before we get to this week's features section, I want to remind you that the features this week are brought to you by Jensen USA. Jensen USA is not just your low price leader, but they are your customer service leader as well. When you're looking for bicycle products, look no further than Jensen USA and go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast. For deals like these, Continental Ultra Race Kevlar Road Tires, 700 by 23C, normally $35. How about $19 each? That's a great price for an amazing set of tires. Or how about Times RXE Carbon Road Shoes, normally $200. Get them today for $79.99 and get both of those products and any of the thousands of products available at JensenUSA.com with their legendary customer service. If you've never used Jensen USA before, go ahead and give them a try. Once you do, you will not go back to those other websites. Go to JensenUSA.com/thefredcast. You will not regret it. We thank Jensen USA so much for their support of the Fredcast, and we thank you for your support of Jensen USA. Well, as I mentioned last week, I had a business trip to Amsterdam, and I had the opportunity to bring my Dahan Speed Pro, the bike I told you about last week, because for those of you who may not be aware, Amsterdam and Copenhagen are probably the two cities in the world that are best known for their bicycle lifestyle. I can't even call it a bike culture. We'll get into that in just a moment. Brought my bike. The only time I was ever in a gasoline-powered vehicle was from the airport and back to the airport. Otherwise, I was either walking or riding my bike. And again, I was there on business, and it was quite a unique experience for me, somebody who is normally kitted up in a helmet and Lycra and special shoes, whether I'm on a mountain bike or a road bike. It was quite a unique experience for me to be wearing street shoes, wearing a suit and tie some days, or at least a coat, a sport coat every day, and riding my bike to go to work. And, you know, I know a lot of you commute back and forth, whether that's in New York or San Francisco or LA or Chicago or London, but it's quite a different experience in Amsterdam because bicycles so outnumber cars in that city, and everyone goes everywhere by bicycle. It really was quite a unique experience. And what was also, I think, unique is that in Amsterdam, they ride the traditional Dutch bicycle. And here I was on a bright yellow folding bike. And I got stopped by a number of people who asked me about the bike. I made a quick video and posted it up on YouTube. You can find that at thefredcast.com to show you what my daily commute was like, and also I interspersed some photos of sort of the bicycle scene around Amsterdam. I think that you'll find it really unique. So go check that out on my website. But first, I also had the opportunity to spend a couple of hours on the day that I arrived with Mark from AmsterdamEyes.com. And I think the interview that you're about to hear really speaks for itself, but I want to thank Mark for the time that he spent with me and the unique perspective that he gave me on cycling in Holland and in Amsterdam. So I hope you enjoy this interview with Mark, and I'll meet you on the other side. Well, as I told you on the last show, here I am sitting in Amsterdam. I'm in Vondelpark. I'm with Mark from AmsterdamEyes.com. We've had a lovely day riding around the city. And first of all, before we get into Amsterdam and what makes it such a great place to be on two wheels, Mark, tell me a little bit about yourself and how you started AmsterdamEyes.com.
Hello, everyone. You should do that, huh? Well, it started out, I've always cycled all my life, like any Dutchie. But in 2008, in the summer, I took some time off and from work. And one of my hobbies is video and photography. And I was searching for a subject. And it came about that I chose people on bikes, the humanity emotion thing, and because it's very peculiar in Amsterdam, of course. And I did some research and I found out on the web that it was this whole thing emerging about cycling and people need wanting to cycle, in, you know, from to work and everything. So I thought, you know, as an inspirational thing maybe and a creative project of mine, I would start a thing about cycling, you know, just showing, no editorials whatsoever, but it went in that direction anyway because people really responded to it. So, and it was a fun project, so I kept at it, and here we are.
And you call it AmsterdamEyes.com, and I'm guessing, did Michael come first?
Michael came first, yeah.
So the Michael we're talking about is Copenhagen or CopenhagenEyes.com. Tell me a little bit about the focus of his blog and how it relates to what you're doing on yours.
Well, it's pretty much the same. Of course, the difference is here we are in Amsterdam, and it's much different than in Copenhagen. The premise is the same. The basics are the same because they came from a decline in cycling, and they rebuilt it, and we did the same here. And on basically the same ideas. And what he's celebrating is the same thing I'm celebrating, which is the freedom of cycling, the normalcy of cycling, but the beauty of it. And that's what I'm trying to show. It's like it's not a fringe activity. It's not dangerous. It's not, you know, all those things that typifies the conversations abroad. And that's awfully often that's being derailed by all the usual suspects. You know, you can You can write a book on that, of course, what the main differences are, but we try to keep it, both Michael and I try to keep it as straightforward as possible with our own ideas about it and the perceptions and just showing the beauty of it. And that will, I have numerous occasions where readers of mine decided to get on a bike again because what they saw is something really beautiful and easy, made it look easy. And they did, and even with a video camera, so they sent in their videos or photos or something else. So you just make a real connection with people who want to cycle or want to pick it up again, and that's nice.
You talked about Amsterdam and the ubiquity almost of bicycles. We're sitting in a park which is packed, I would say, and just looking around at the number of bicycles in the park as we rode through, it's almost like 90% of the people got here by bike.
Yeah, well, there's only one reason. It's the most practical way. So, when you have a city that is contrary to what many people think, it was not made for bicycles. Historically, it has a grid that is now easy to cycling in, but it's still a very busy grid with trams and everything. But still, despite everything, and because of the infrastructural investments we made, it makes it easy for all kinds of people. You don't have to be a road warrior. You just, family with kids and everything. They can ride here. And why would they ride here and not take the car? Because it's easier to get by bike. And that's the only reason. Not because they want to make a statement or whatever. No, it's lovely. It's nice. They do it to work. They do it to the schools. And they do it to the park. So it's the common sense thing to do.
I'm kind of a geek when it comes to bikes. I'm constantly, whenever I see a bike, I watch them go by. And I don't know if you noticed when we were sitting and having coffee, but my eyes were constantly wandering. And you kept looking over your shoulder. What's David looking at? Yeah. There's just so many bikes. And I kept looking at them because everybody is on a bicycle. And you said it, whether it was the 8-year-old girl we saw going by or the man who could have been in his late 70s going by and everything in between, women in long skirts, riding side saddle even. It is just, to say it's part of the culture almost denigrates it. It just is part of your lifestyle.
Yes, and it's funny that you should mention that thing about being part of the culture. I don't think a lot of people perceive the Dutch as, you grow up with it and you didn't know anything else. But that where America, for instance, is now, we've been there, maybe in a lesser sense, but still, for our perspective, we were there in the 70s, late 60s. We were being, marginalized. So it's part of our culture in the sense that we treasure it because it's so convenient and we miss it if we don't have it. And that's a big part. But it's not necessarily in our genes. It's become in our gene because it's made so accessible. So there's no question. There's no doubt about what should I do. Just take the bike. It's such a non-issue and it's so taken for granted here that if you go to any Dutch person and ask, or say, I really love your bicycle culture. What do you mean? Yeah, well, what are you, an urban cyclist or are you a commuter? He wouldn't know what you're talking about. Or a utility cyclist or whatever. We give them these labels and there's a lot of, we know abroad there are a lot of, all these political things going on. You're either labeled this or labeled that. If you have the type of bikes, the same way that you told me the story about that people think you're one type of person when you have that kind of bike, right? And it's just not the case. Same with people, the people themselves and how they choose to ride or whatever and who they ride with. It doesn't matter. But I understand that people like to label things. They have to recognize something. But here it is so ubiquitous and so normal that people don't even think about it. It's like opening the tap for, water tap. Yeah. It has to be there.
It, we were talking about exactly what you said. People, when I say I'm a cyclist, say, oh, you're a roadie. Are you a mountain biker? And I say, well, I have so many bikes. It depends on the day. It depends on the mood. Here, I don't think people call themselves cyclists. I mean, for instance, I don't think a New Yorker would say, I'm a pedestrian, right? People here don't say they're cyclists. They're just going from point A to point B.
Exactly. I have nothing to add to that. Okay, it's exactly what it is.
Now, one of the things that, you joked with me about when I emailed you and told you I was coming was I said, you know, I don't know what to wear. And you said, go into your closet, whatever you have in your closet. Because one of the things that, is foreign for me is I'm not wearing a helmet today. I'm not wearing Lycra. I'm wearing regular street clothes. My listeners are going to scold me for it.
You listeners, I'm going to send the picture I took of him, and you can, you know, go crazy on it.
But it's what I found was, I think I saw five people wearing helmets. One of them was in full Cervelo kit, and the other four were?
Those were tourists on yellow bikes. Uh-huh. Yeah, and that's okay. You know, if they feel that it's necessary, that's fine. The only thing we're against here, and we see no point in pushing, is mandatory helmet wear. Because we have seen abroad what has done that. It hasn't done cycling rates any good. That's one thing. And it's sort of, that's counterproductive. It's the whole... how do you say that? I think you have to cut here.
Okay.
Yeah, but how do you say that when you you balance what is beneficial in the health department? You know, when on levels of, you know, how healthy it is, all the benefits of cycling, countering what could go wrong with cycling, whatever, like the dangers, supposedly dangers.
Balancing.
You're right. Balancing. There's no question what is better. So we made a decision long ago. Is that all this, the cyclist union, the research institution, the government, decided long ago that it's counterproductive to push for helmet wear. It doesn't make any difference, actually, because less people will cycle when there's a mandatory helmet law, that it will make cycling dangerous, actually. It will increase risk. No, not just in perception, because less people will be cycling, so the dominance of car drivers will be back. So the less people are on the road physically, it's like the safety by numbers situation. It's not like a sacred thing, but it is an effect that can be measured. Less people, we have a graph, I have a graph linked on my site, which will show the amount of miles covered by bicycle rates, mm-hmm. and of all the countries, Western societies. And the amount of lethal accidents, right? You see, the bar of the amount of miles cycled of the Netherlands all the way on the right, all the way on the top, and you see the other graph of cycling injuries or deaths all the way down. So you see it in Denmark as well, the more people cycle, the less accidents there are, because the only reason why people cycle more is because there are provisions there. It's made safe. So that will entice people. And what we've learned is that the more you make it possible for people to cycle, the more they're out there. And not just all over the road. And what I'm saying is just by sheer numbers that people, that drivers are aware, more aware of people on two wheels, then you make it less dangerous.
So it's several factors then. Right. I mean, it's the fact that you have the infrastructure, that the roads are designed for it, that you have the cycling lane, we have the laws in the States, but it still is dangerous. I notice drivers here. I notice that when I've ridden in France, because they're more used to seeing bikes on the road, that as a result, it makes riding a bike safer.
Yeah, that's true. All that is true. It's also like, often it sounds like a chicken and an egg story. That's why I call it a comprehensive policy that covers all bases. You cannot have one without the other. You cannot put a piece of paint on the road without dealing with doors opening. You cannot just have a sharrow and think that all will be fine. Mm-hmm. For instance, when it comes to car drivers and, you know, legal issues, the responsibility, liability, we just put it bluntly on the car driver. He's always at fault. So he has to watch out, because it most likely he is not paying attention and he's not adhering to the fact that it's in an urban environment. You have kids cycling, who will make mistakes? You have old people cycling who are not fast. So if you in our grid of traffic and all these modes, if you're not aware as a car driver, you're most likely to be at fault.
That makes nothing but sense to me. I mean, that just makes sense.
So they have to prove in court if it's otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, it's like in the States, right? If you rear-end someone, you're always the one at fault.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You don't have the distance.
Right.
Right. You don't maintain the distance.
So on the one hand, you've got the infrastructure. On the other hand, you've got really the teeth in the laws, which I think maybe that's what we're missing in our laws. But we were also talking about a stigma. You know, in the States, we were talking about how, in some cases, cycling is seen as a fringe activity. It's seen, you know, it's only those who want to be green. It's only those on the left. You don't have that here.
No. No. Well, typically, when in the 60s and 70s, people started organizing themselves to fight back against the car. And that's how the cyclists' union started. They were considered, of course, somewhere on the left. But that was not considered something evil. I mean, you know, ideas come from the left or from the right. And as a democracy, you decide whether it's good, beneficial for society. So apparently, a lot of people agreed. So it made sense, and a new direction was taken.
And as a result, there are disincentives to driving as opposed to riding a bike.
Exactly, yeah. It's made the taxation is very high. Parking is a beep. I can say that.
I know, you saved me from bleeping.
Okay, well, there you go. It's a good thing I've been podcasting. Yeah, there are many, it's like a carrot and stick thing. So slowly, with heaps and bounds, they've been implemented. And basically, the common opinion among Dutch public is that, yeah, we should, you know, make it more feasible for cycling. And we should really keep it up at a certain level. And even, you know, high parking fees are acceptable to a certain extent, because they show benefits to it. So, and there are alternatives. If you don't offer an alternative in an urban setting, then people will actually, you know, say, no way, over my dead body. But here you can, the option is, you cycle, you have public transportation on every level, it's convenient too, and only in exceptional way, whether it's financially feasible or lucrative, you know, I can take the car or find another option. But, yeah.
And you were also saying that some of the most direct routes into the city, you can't go by car.
No. No, it's cars are rerouted. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's a lot of traffic calming with residential areas. So it's either rerouted. It's a lot of towns are constructed or reconfigured based on that they divert the car and you have direct routes of cyclists. So for cyclists. So, yeah. It's a policy thing. It's on urban planning. It's on local level. It's on national level, and it's all been being promoted. And well, it's also about sort of vision, you know, you have as a country or as a city. It's like, it's a long term. It's above the political issues. You know, we decide for the next 20 years we need to go there. We need to invest in that. So, that goes beyond any political party program. It's like a common program.
And beyond political parties, I think what you'll see when you go to Mark's blog is you'll find photos of people all across the spectrum, all ages, genders, political persuasions, social economic status.
You know their politics.
Well, I mean, maybe you can tell. You know, bumper stickers on their bikes. There we go. I'm labeling. But one of the things you see in these pictures is that you just see everyone riding a bike for every different purpose.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, if you would copy that image to the States, you would see similar things. The same way that we consider it sometimes negative to be labeling people on bikes, you know, if you're on a mountain bike, you're that kind of person. But you'll see them here too. But it doesn't really matter. The difference is people accept a bike for it and what it is. They just put on their clothes and, you know, if they ride a mountain bike in their suit, that's fine. You know, they just have to mind that they don't, you know, make it dirty, but make the clothes dirty. But it is such a non-issue that it's almost embarrassing. You know, people that I meet or talk to sometimes say, you almost don't have a bicycle culture. As in, that means you don't have the fringe groups. You don't have the fixies. Well, we do have the fixies. They're small group. Yeah. Well, we do have them. And they're, you know, even here, that's possible. But it's not the forefront group because it's already established. So it's more like a cultural phenomenon that's worldwide and that's been adapted here as well, and that's nice. It's, we don't say you shouldn't be riding a special bike, which is saying just don't tell us, you know, we're participating in this fringe activity, because it isn't, and that's what makes it so acceptable. We don't say to just look alike like anybody else. It's just do whoever you are, doesn't matter. Just go dressed in a diaper, which I saw yesterday. No, seriously, guy who dresses up in a diaper, in a man diaper, every day. And he gets on a bike. It's funny, but you'll see it. Okay. Yeah.
At the same time, while bikes are such an important part of the lifestyle, just the life here, even being fans of professional cycling is still a big deal to a lot of Dutch people. As an example, as my taxi drove me to my hotel this morning, there's banners everywhere for the Giro, which is going to be starting here in a week or so.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's a big thing. Mm-hmm. It's not as big as football or, you know, ice skating in the winter, because that's big, you know, ice speed skating. But, cycling is big here. So racing is big here as well. Tour de France is unbelievably popular. I mean, people will stay home, fix their vacation around us. The Dutch are famous in France alongside the route of the... I mean, you will see thousands and thousands of fans there.
So the Alpe d'Huez, right? Yeah. One of the most famous climbs of Tour de France. Yeah. So I was there 2 years ago, and I climbed. And every rider I passed was Dutch.
Yeah.
Because that's like their hill.
It's their shrine.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to take yourself serious, you want to tell your grandkids something, you have to go to Alpe d'Huez.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's the thing, is that I think in the States you have this dichotomy between those who use their bike for utility, for transportation, for commuting, and then you have the roadies and the mountain bikers and the professional cycling fans. And what you see here is... it's just a part of life. Some people are cycling fans. Some people aren't. But it's just, this is the way that you get around. And it is, there are so many things in place to facilitate that it just, you don't even give it another thought.
No, exactly. Exactly. And that is one thing that we really have to appreciate, that once you get to that point where we are right now, then it's two things. One, you have to appreciate that it's beautiful, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and we should value that as such, but we shouldn't, rest on our laurels, because there's so many forces at play that can ruin it. So, you know, you have to treasure that. But one thing about, the mountain bikers, or the race bikers, and the normal, you know, I think one mistake to make is that you have to sort of... put them all together. You don't necessarily have to put them all together in a sense that mountain bikers are mountain bikers and, you know, nor people commute on bicycle. No. Once it's on two wheels, whatever purpose, like I drive a car on vacation, but I also drive a car if I would to go to a wedding far away, whatever. I don't call myself a wedding driver. Right. I don't call myself a freaking, I don't know what. That's what it is, you know. And as long as it's on two wheels, whatever activity it is, that's fine. But my focus is on everyday cycling, whatever bike that is. But it's the beauty of everyday cycling, because it's accessible and it's such an enhancement of life. And I try to inspire people who haven't found that yet or don't see it that way. And if they don't, that's fine too. But I see many examples of people who, you know, their eyes are opened and they explore it on their own terms. And that's great. Just see that process going. I'm not an evangelist, but I'll defend this way of life anytime I can, you know, any way I can, and based on merits and facts. And I know a little bit about the history, so I mix them up and I'll just show it, and they'll do what they want to do with it. And I meet a lot of people like you.
Yeah.
I get to travel. People want to hear my opinion. I get to host people. It's fun. if that's part of my journey here or on this thing called a bike, fine. Absolutely fine. Nice. Yeah.
And you know, I really would encourage you, whether you're ever planning on coming to Amsterdam or not, go to Mark's site. It's AmsterdamEyes.com. Of course, there'll be links in the show notes. You'll learn something about yourself as a cyclist, and you'll see aspects of yourself in the stories that Mark writes about and in the photos that he takes. Just because these folks are here in Holland, trust me, you're going to see something of yourself. Mark, thanks for the day. Thanks for your time. It's been great meeting you.
It was great meeting you. Absolutely lovely. Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I think I need to do more interviews outside. I loved hearing the dogs barking and the birds chirping. Anyway, I want to thank Mark for that interview and providing us with a unique perspective on cycling in Amsterdam. I really had just a phenomenal experience in Amsterdam and enjoyed all of the cycling. Go to thefredcast.com, check out the photos and check out the videos. I think that you will enjoy it as much as I did. Okay, I promised that I would continue to bring you upcoming events here on the Fredcast, and today is no exception, starting with the fact that tomorrow begins National Bike Month here in the United States. May is National Bike Month, and for those of you who don't know, Bike to Work Week is May the 17th through the 21st, and Bike to Work Day is May 21st. I put a link in the show notes to where you can get more information from the League of American Bicyclists. But this is our time to Amsterdamize ourselves here in the United States by participating in May, National Bike Month. Two more events to tell you about, and they come to us via our friend and listener and fellow Fred Rudy from the Washington, D.C. area. And these descriptions are in Rudy's own words, so thank you, Rudy, so much. The first is May 30th, the end of National Bike Month. This takes place in Newport, Virginia. It's the Mountains of Misery. And I think I've told you, I tend to avoid rides that have death, pain, misery, things like that in their names, but sounds like Rudy's doing this one. He says, this ride offers both English, 103 miles, and double metric, 128 miles distances. And either route finishes with the Cat 1 climb to the Mountain Lake Lodge, where he says he thinks Dirty Dancing was filmed. The Century has over 9,000 feet of climbing, and the double metric has about 12,500 feet of climbing. And he says the final climb is a killer, averaging over 12% over 3.5 miles, maxing out at about 17%. Ouch. Hence the name Mountains of Misery. Coming at the end of the ride, it's a bear, but the ride organizers make it worthwhile with a very fun finish line done in a Tour de France style with announcers, a finish chute, and cheering masses along the sidelines. Sounds like fun if you can get past the misery. The second event Rudy wants us to know about is the Mountain Mama Road Bike Challenge. This is August 7th in Monterey, Virginia. Rudy says this is a two-state century with 10,000 feet of climbing over nine mountain passes. This is a smaller ride in terms of infrastructure, smaller than Misery, but it takes in some of the best hills in the Mid-Atlantic. The climbing starts from the crack of the referee's pistol and doesn't relent, though the scenery makes up for the tough work required to scale all those passes. Rudy, thanks so much for sending us the Mountains of Misery and the Mountain Mama Road Bike Challenge. If any of you out there would like to send us your favorite upcoming events, please do so. Just send an email to thefredcast@gmail.com. Well, that's about going to do it for the meatier portion of the show. Just a couple of things left. First of all, we want to thank our sponsors, Keen Footwear, for sponsoring the news segment on this week's show, and Jensen USA for sponsoring our features segment. And we thank you, of course, for supporting our sponsors. We also thank you for supporting the Fredcast directly by clicking that donation link at www.thefredcast.com. And speaking of www.thefredcast.com, that is how you can find out all the information that you're looking for, including links and show notes on the Fredcast. Of course, if you'd like to keep track of what is going on with the Fredcast on a day-to-day and often a minute-by-minute basis, follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/Fredcast. Of course, you can send us email at any time to thefredcast@gmail.com or use the Fredcast listener hotline at area code 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. Well, there's just one thing left for this week's show, and that's our PodSafe Cycling music. This week's PodSafe Cycling music was chosen specifically for the Fredcast. and this week's theme by the Cadence Revolution, your weekly podcast of PodSafe music that's perfect for your indoor cycling, available at www.cadencerevolution.com. And don't forget, there is an app for Cadence Revolution, and I still have a couple of promo codes left. So just shoot me an email and I will send one out to you. There are a limited number available, so get me that email as quickly as you can. Today's PodSafe cycling music is called, coincidentally enough, Amsterdam, and it's by Shane Alexander. There are links in the show notes to Cadence Revolution, ShaneAlexanderMusic.com, and where you can buy this song on iTunes. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for staying subscribed, and thanks for telling your friends about the Fredcast. We'll be back next week with another show, but between this show and the next, enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.
Why don't you